All right, excellent. It seems like both council is here. So we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Court of Appeals to both council. You are both familiar with their processes, but I'll go ahead and tell you anyways. Appellant's counsel, you will have 15 minutes for your opening argument and then 5 minutes for rebuttal. And respondent's counsel, you will have 15 minutes for your argument. Please be sure to state your name for the record and who you represent before you begin your argument, because there will be an audio recording available of this following the argument. And when you're not speaking, please make sure you're on mute. With that, I'll ask the marshal to call the next case.
A231222, respondent, State of Minnesota versus appellant Jason Michael Randall.
Counsel for appellant, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, your honors, counsel. Good morning. My name is John Munnins. I represent the appellant, Jason Randall, in today's case. Because the district court erred when it held that the expansion of the traffic stop was supported by a reasonable, articulable suspicion, we respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's denial of Mr. Randall's motion to suppress and vacate his conviction. The district court erred because it upheld the expansion of this traffic stop on erroneous factual findings, broad conclusions which were unsupported by articulated facts, and Mr. Randall's criminal history. The totality of these circumstances demonstrate that the expansion was essentially based only on Mr. Randall's criminal history, which is insufficient to support a reasonable, articulable suspicion. A reasonable, articulable suspicion must be particularized to the individual and based on specific, articulable facts which reasonably warrant the intrusion, or rather the scope of the expansion. To expand a stop, the expansion must be tied to and justified by either the original purpose of the stop, independent probable cause, or reasonableness under Terry. That's Askaruth, an ongoing reasonable articulable suspicion in order to expand a traffic stop. In this case, there were no objective indicators that Mr. Randall was under the influence of a controlled substance. He did not have glossy eyes or dilated pupils that were observed. There was no odor of any substance coming from his vehicle. He was not shaking or sweating. When he was asked, Mr. Randall did not admit to being under the influence of anything. The trooper articulated his reasons for expanding the stop to a DWI investigation on pages 16 to 17 of the transcript. He justified it based on the 911 call, what he classified as Mr. Randall's erratic behavior. He describes that as restlessness or unable to sit still, and his criminal history. The district court also credited the 911 call as a reason for the expansion, also credited Mr. Randall's restlessness and unable to sit still. The district court added that he had slurred speech. Importantly, the district court found that Mr. Randall mispronounced Moorhead twice and greeted the trooper a second time when he reapproached his vehicle, which, and this is quoting from page 4 of the district court's order, the trooper believed to be odd behavior, suggesting that Mr. Randall was under the influence of some type of substance. These are erroneous findings. If you look at the actual squad video, at approximately 2 minutes and 10 seconds, the trooper asks Mr. Randall where he's heading. Mr. Randall says Moorhead. He does not mispronounce it.
We've all listened to the videotapes. I didn't think he mispronounced it either, but I thought he said something as to me sounded like War Road, which is another one of those northern communities. I don't know that there is such a concern on that mispronunciation, but again, that would be a call by whoever is hearing or discerning that. I think my concern is, and I wish you would expand on a little bit more, is the stop in and of itself, because when I watch the video, it seems as if the entire basis for the stop was pretty thin. I mean, can you elaborate on that?
Certainly. The basis for the stop,
other than the 911 call, that was pretty factual and graphic.
So yes, I mean, the basis could be the 911 call, but really he does clock Mr. Randall driving approximately 74 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone. That is enough to pull someone over and initiate a traffic stop to give him a ticket. So we don't contest that initial stop. The 911 call, though, is problematic, I think, when you consider all the facts surrounding what the trooper then testifies to. He gets this report that the vehicle is swerving within its lane and failing to signal as it turns, as it changes lanes, excuse me. When you watch the squad video, the trooper is behind Mr. Randall's truck for over a minute before pulling him over. And he actually drives up alongside the truck at one point and then drops back and pulls him over. During that entire time, Mr. Randall's truck does not swerve, doesn't weave. It goes straight as an arrow down the freeway.
Okay, so now I'm confused. I thought you said that you're not challenging the initial stop, but now I'm hearing you challenging the initial stop, just so I get it straight.
Yep, I don't challenge the initial stop, but under Askaruth, if they are to expand the stop based on, you know, the original legitimate purpose, should the state argue that part of that purpose was investigating this 911 call, there's really insufficient basis to expand the speeding ticket. Essentially, what we have is speeding stop.
So you agree, though, that even though it was the speed was, I don't know, 78, I can't remember what it was, but it was a marginal, anything over the speed limit as a basis to stop. You're conceding that was enough?
Correct. At least for the initial stop of the vehicle. But the problem is once he expands it to the DWI investigation, and both the trooper and the district court use the 911 call as a basis to expand the stop, that is just unreasonable given the information that Trooper Iverson had. He observed the vehicle, as I say, for over a minute. It did not swerve, didn't weave. It was driving perfectly fine. The trooper then interacts with Mr. Randall for approximately a minute and a half during his first encounter with him. And the trooper admits nothing he saw in that initial interaction with Mr. Randall gave him reason to believe that Mr. Randall was under the influence of anything. So he observes the vehicle for a minute. He interacts with Mr. Randall for about a minute and a half. And observing the vehicle might have even been a bit longer. That's just all we have on the squad video. But he has all of that. And essentially, we're put right back in Pike, where Pike held that if an officer has reason to believe that, you know, someone is driving revoked, and they see a driver that seems to match the description of the owner, they have reason to pull that person over. But the example that the court gave in Pike is very informative, because there they said, you know, if there was a 22-year-old male who was the owner of the vehicle and was known to be driving the vehicle while revoked, but then an officer observes a 50 or 60-year-old female driving the vehicle, they lose that reasonable articulable suspicion to pull over the vehicle. Very similarly here, if he has this 911 call, but then no observation that he sees of the vehicle itself or of Mr. Randall in his first several minutes of interacting with Mr. Randall in his vehicle does not support that 911 call, he loses that suspicion. And so then all he is left with to expand the stop is really the idea that any of his observations would have supported that he was under the influence of some type of controlled substance. And that's where the district court really does err. They find that mispronouncing Moorhead twice and greeting the trooper a second time led the trooper to believe that he had odd behavior and was under the influence of something. That is not supported by the record. That is not a finding that the trooper testifies to. He's never asked if in his experience and training, what types of behaviors someone might exhibit when they're under the influence of something, and how or whether Mr. Randall's interactions with him demonstrated that he was under the influence of some type of controlled substance. So really what we have is the trooper goes back to his squad, runs Mr. Randall in his computer and sees that he has a prior DWI. And from there, he essentially just has a confirmation bias. He goes back and everything that he observes, he believes now is Mr. Randall under the influence of something. But again, he gives a...
Counsel, in the first interaction, the officer could see the interlock system in there, right?
That is correct. I actually think that's a beneficial fact for Mr. Randall, because if he has this report, again, it goes to negating the 911 call. I mean, if he has this report of swerving over the road, you know, or whatever it might be, then he sees an ignition interlock. He learns that vehicle cannot be started by a driver who has any amount of alcohol in his system. And yet he just observed the vehicle driving down the road. So really he has no basis to believe that there would be any alcohol involved in this situation now. And he only has grounds to try and find a reasonable articulable suspicion for a controlled substance use. So I think that actually cuts in Mr. Randall's favor because it negates the fact that he would be driving under the influence of alcohol, as the vehicle simply wouldn't start. It wouldn't be able to go. They have to blow into the machine to check it. It's in the record that they talk about how a driver really can't start that if they have any amount of alcohol in their system. They also reference his, what the trooper calls erratic behavior. And again, this is not a clear conclusion that he makes. It's not an articulated fact. Articulated facts are things like where he says he was restless. We take contention with that, as I think it's negated by the squad video. You don't see Mr. Randall moving around at all while he's in the truck. He gets out, and for a solid minute after he is ordered out of that truck, the trooper moves his squad, and Mr. Randall simply stands perfectly still. He doesn't fidget. He doesn't move. I mean, he does nothing to exhibit any type of restless behavior, which admittedly is not, the trooper is talking about the restless behavior he sees in the actual cab of the truck. But I think it's informative when we look at the squad video and we can see that he's just not exhibiting these symptoms or this erratic behavior. Erratic is, you know, unreasonable, it's unpredictable, it's more of a high energy, a simple little restlessness does not seem to really qualify enough to get to an erratic behavior. And what we have here is really a case more similar to Wigand. And in Wigand, they actually had a little bit more of objective indicators of some type of controlled substance use. The officers observed that the defendant was very slow and quiet when he spoke. He was overly nervous and shaking, and he had glossy eyes. Shaking and glossy eyes certainly are indicative of controlled substance use. However, the court denied the, or the Supreme Court rather, reversed the upholding the expansion of that stop because it simply was not enough to find that there was a particularized, reasonable, articulable suspicion of controlled substance use. In the cases where this kind of thing is upheld, there is simply more information. And I think State v. Taylor is informative in that regard. State v. Taylor also doesn't have any objective indicators that the defendant was under the influence of anything. However, the trooper observed that he had a case of beer behind him, was within reach of the driver. The case was open. It was missing several cans. And then the trooper runs and sees that he has a license that's canceled, inimical to public safety. The trooper testifies that being canceled, inimical to public safety, is indicative of repeated driving while under the influence. So there in Taylor, the trooper is able to articulate what he sees, why he then believes that this is all indicative of someone who might be under the influence. And it's important because in Taylor, the issue was whether or not asking Mr. Taylor, have you had anything to drink today, was a reasonable expansion. The court said with the information they had, that question was fine. And Mr. Taylor actually admits that to drinking. So everything kind of after that is really given more reasonable articulable suspicion, and they're able to expand that stop and investigate a potentially driving while under the influence. We simply don't have that here. What we have is simply Mr. Randall's prior history of a felony DWI, but he's otherwise seemingly driving legal. He's got his ignition interlock installed. His car is functioning. The trooper has seen him drive for over a minute, interacted with him for a minute and a half, and sees no signs of impairment whatsoever. Then he goes back to the car and asks him, are you under the influence of anything? Have you had anything to drink? That's an expansion of the stop right there. And he does not have the basis to even ask that question. But even if you say, okay, it's a minimal intrusion, just asking a question, and he had enough with the history and maybe a little bit of the restlessness, which he really only observes, he says, on the second approach anyway. Even if that's enough, Mr. Randall denies having any use. So the officer is not given any more information. He is essentially left with the answer that Mr. Randall gives him. And he has no basis to expand, but he just says, I'm going to ask you to step out and perform field sobriety testing. That is an unreasonable expansion of his traffic stop. The trooper really only had grounds to pull him over for speeding. He had no basis to believe that he was under the influence of anything. And to the extent he might have, he didn't articulate what facts he observed demonstrate that Mr. Randall was under the influence of a controlled substance. And that is the key here. That's That's, you know, that's the State v. Johnson, which I also cite in my brief, where there's a 1977 State v. Johnson. A trooper just says he was suspicious. The guy was acting suspicious, but doesn't articulate any facts. 12 years later, in State v. Johnson in 1989, the trooper is able to describe evasive behavior that the defendant exhibited, and how he actively tried to avoid the trooper after making eye contact with him. Since he was able to give the articulable facts, his conclusion, he was suspicious, is then credited. Since the trooper here cannot articulate the facts or does not articulate the facts as to why he believed Mr. Randall was under the influence of a controlled substance, expanding the traffic stop to a DWI investigation is simply unreasonable and not supported by a reasonable articulable suspicion. We therefore ask that you reverse and vacate his conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, when you're ready, you can go ahead and unmute and you'll have 15 minutes for your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Caitlin Herlock and I'm the attorney for the respondent in this matter. In this matter, we're asking your honors to uphold the district court's ruling and the conviction, as we do not believe that the district court erred when finding that that Trooper Iverson had reasonable articulable suspicion to expand the traffic stop in this matter. As much like counsel for the appellant, we do believe that the initial reason for the stop was constitutional. There was that 911 call that indicated the vehicle was weaving, going fog line to fog line without signaling. After Trooper Iverson received that notification from dispatch, he did call that complainant back to confirm that when he caught up to the vehicle, did observe a traffic violation, albeit 4 miles over, was still violating the law. When he then approached the driver, he was able to observe Mr. Randall, and I think that's where things became a little suspicious for the trooper. On the video, you can hear Mr. Randall somewhat slurring his words, at least in my listening to it, stumbling over some words. The time of night, saying that he was driving to visit a friend in Moorhead. It was about 1:30 in the morning. Seemed like an intriguing, I guess, time to be driving to see a friend.
I do have to make this comment. You know, I watched the video and one thing that immediately occurred to myself is, oh my gosh, how much traffic was going by on that road. And granted, most of those were retail semis, but for that hour of the morning where usually you find it unusual to have someone traveling, frankly, I think that is against your client's position, because I almost thought, I wish I would have started counting the vehicles that were going by the stop trooper and this fellow. That's just a comment.
There was a lot of traffic. However, I do, as Your Honor noted, was a lot of semis. My view of it didn't see a lot of passenger cars. When the trooper, you know, each step, each fact that he learned, I think added to the totality of the circumstances in this matter that led to him expanding the traffic stop. The restless behavior that he saw, which at this time the troopers didn't have body cams, so unfortunately we didn't see it from his view. And the view of the squad video with the, you can't really see what's going on in the vehicle due to the time of night and the windows being a little darkened. The state does believe that every fact that the trooper learned did lead to a justifiable expansion of the stop. When he came back to his vehicle to run the Mr. Randall's driver's license, he did see his criminal history. He had already seen the ignition interlock, which would not have started had Mr. Randall been under the influence of alcohol or had any alcohol in his system. But if he had a controlled substance in his system, that ignition interlock would have started. When he came back to talk to Mr. Randall again, Mr. Randall greeted the trooper again, which the trooper hadn't been in his car for that long period of time when running the license. So it seems suspicious that he would greet the trooper again as if he hadn't talked to him before. Trooper Iverson did testify that he, as part of his training, had taken advanced roadside investigations for drug impaired drivers, which would give him more information as to what to spot when dealing with someone under the influence of a controlled substance and driving. I think when the district court looked at all of the evidence that was submitted into the record and then taking into account Trooper Iverson's testimony along with the case law in totality of the circumstances, I do believe that it was properly expanded. And I do think that the court properly ruled in this matter, given, I think, especially the time of night, the eating during a conversation with a trooper, the 911 caller's observations, along with then speeding.
Counsel, what do we do with the fact that when the trooper then did find this white truck, it was driving, I mean, it was over the limit, but it was driving straight. There was no weaving going on. What do we do with that fact?
I think we take that in conjunction with the previous observation by another person. I recognize that the trooper did not see that, but he did call that complainant and confirm with the 911 caller that that's what they had seen. So they relayed it twice to two different people. I think at that point he wasn't weaving, but was still violating traffic laws.
But all right, so let's go to the other fact of the restlessness. When he's removed from the car and stands in the back in front of the squad car and back of his car, he seems to be standing pretty still there. Is that a fact that we can use? I mean, the stop's already been expanded at that point. But is that a fact that we can use in this case?
I think it can't be ignored. Obviously that he is standing still. However, I don't know. I don't know how we quite use it, but it certainly can't be ignored. When the trooper had testified that he had seen him restless in the car, and then when he's standing out, he's no longer restless. I think this is one of those cases where it's unfortunate we didn't have body cam to have seen exactly what the trooper testified that he saw. But it's not a fact that can be ignored, that we can clearly see him standing still.
Well, counsel, given that it's the fact that cannot be ignored, how do we get to the totality of the circumstances that he can expand the stop? You have the citizen complaint that there's erratic driving, but the officer observation that there's not erratic driving. You have the allegations or the information that he was erratic, but we can see the video when he's standing outside the car, he's not erratic. You have the officer before going to his squad car observing the ignition or lock and asking him about whether or not he's consumed alcohol or drugs. He says no. And it's not until you go back to his squad car that he comes back, and then there's this expansion. How does, looking at the totality of circumstances, how do we get to that expansion?
I think the facts that lead to the totality to go to that expansion, I think there's more facts that lead towards the ability to expand the stop than don't. I think the citizen complaint, the observation of yet another traffic violation, the eating during the conversations with the trooper, his slurring of speech or stumbling over his words, the ignition interlock, and then the the time of night, him claiming, saying that he was going to see a friend. And then the greeting the trooper again, I think those all outweigh the trooper not himself witnessing the erratic driving and then the standing still. I think there's still enough to, under the law, to expand the stop into the DWI investigation, which ultimately led to the search of the vehicle and the controlled substance that were found in this matter. And I think that taking all of that into account and Your Honor's reviewing everything that's in the record, I do believe that the district court was justified in the decision that they made in denying the appellant's motion at the district court level, and would ask that Your Honors uphold the district court's decision in this matter and maintain the conviction in Mr. Randall's matter.
All right. I don't see any other questions from the panel. So thank you, counsel, for your argument. And counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd like to start talking about the timing of Mr. Randall driving down the road. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. However, I mean, he even admitted he was driving from Rochester, where he lives, to Moorhead. This is a several hour drive. It would have taken him a long time to get there. And I believe, as Judge Werke pointed out, I mean, there was traffic. It's not as though this was an absolute dead time of night at 3 a.m. or something, where he would have left closer to 10 p.m. or something like that. I mean, if he got on the road by 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, he'd still not make it to Moorhead by 1 a.m. So I don't know how much the timing of his driving conduct really comes into play here, particularly given the other observations. The state also said that as soon as Trooper Iverson walked up to Mr. Randall, he became suspicious, and that is just not accurate with the record that we are given. On page 23 of the contested omnibus transcript, the trooper does say that he really did not notice enough. The phrase that he uses is for a light switch to be turned on in his mind about any suspicious driving or potentially being under the influence of anything. The state does note that Trooper Iverson did have some training in this matter. That is on page 12 of the transcript. He talks about having DWI training as well as drug impaired driving training. But again, what we have here is a trooper who fails then to use that training, articulate the facts that he is seeing and the conduct that he is seeing, and then provide us with an informed opinion about why he believes this would be someone under the influence of a controlled substance. Things like eating and greeting a trooper twice seem more akin to nervousness, which we see in many cases. Cited in my brief, I refer to the court to State v. Burbach. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, B-U-R-B-A-C-H. There, they actually had a tip that people in this car would have cocaine in their possession. The officer goes up, smells alcohol in the vehicle, asks the driver to get out, and then realizes the alcohol smell isn't coming from that driver. But the whole time, this driver is significantly more nervous than typical. And the Minnesota Supreme Court says that is still not enough for a reasonable, articulable suspicion. Nervous behavior alone is just not going to do it. The cases where we affirm things like this would be like Holtz versus Commissioner of Public Safety, which the district court did cite in its order. In Holtz, the defendant was speeding. When he got pulled over, he pulled into a parking lot and then got out of his vehicle to walk away. The officers went to grab the defendant. He smelled of alcohol, had bloodshot, watery eyes. He had slurred speech and was belligerent with officers. And there they found that was overwhelming circumstances. Here, again, there's no odor, no objective indicators that the trooper testified to that he was under the influence of anything. And he was really, Mr. Randall was quite cordial with the officer the whole time. They had a very pleasant back and forth during that first initial interaction, asking about, you know, how long his temporary tags were taking to arrive and things of that nature. And so essentially what we have is every fact that the state relies on is negated by an innocent explanation or simply a plain observation of the squad video. And so there was not a reasonable articulable suspicion for the trooper to expand just a speeding ticket stop into a DWI investigation. As I noted in my opening, it seems like the trooper really just had a confirmation bias once learning about Mr. Randall's prior history. Nothing about his history that the trooper testified to is indicative of multiple DWIs as they were testified to in Taylor. He's basically left with, I've got a guy on conditional release. I'm concerned that he's driving. So on a hunch or a whim, I'm going to ask him out to do field sobriety tests. And we don't allow expansions of stops on hunches or whims of law enforcement. Unless there are any other questions, I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel. I'm not seeing any other questions from the panel. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments today and your briefs in this matter. We will get an opinion out in the statutory time frame, and the case is submitted. And you are free to exit the Zoom with the thanks of the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that concludes our arguments, our oral arguments for today via Zoom. And we'll stand in recess.